Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. In 1940, the Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority, with funding from the federal government, built a development the likes of which had never been seen in Columbus. Built to provide decent housing for blacks, Poindexter Village became home to generations of descendants of the Great Migration from 1900 to 1940. That's when millions of African Americans moved from the legally segregated and violent rural southern United States to the urban West, Northeast, and Midwest. But as redlining laws were banned, the more prosperous Poindexter residents left the development and crime and drugs moved in. Today, only two buildings that are in there, and they are unoccupied, of the original 33 remain. The late famed artist Amina Robinson talked about her love of change, but her desire also to remember.
You know, I love change. I absolutely love change. But you've got to have some knowledge and try to study. You just have to study the place that you grew up so you can share it.
Today we remember Poindexter Village, the subject of a new exhibit at the Columbus Historical Society at COSI called Poindexter Village, A Portrait in Stories. Joining us is Executive Director of the Columbus Historical Society, Jeff Lefevre. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And also joining us is curator of the new exhibit, Betty Stoll. Welcome, Betty.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you first about the title of the exhibit, Jeff Lefevre, Poindexter Village, A Portrait in Stories. Why did you decide to call it that?
It's actually a committee decision. It wasn't necessarily our decision to do that, but I think it's a perfect title because it was a community of people and their individual stories. But the exhibit is a picture of what the entire storyline of the or the portrait of the entire village was, kind of a portrait of the place. So it kind of brings both elements together. It plays off the idea that we do have art in the exhibit, a couple of Mina Robinson pieces also. So I think it's a really good, well-rounded title for the exhibit.
You curated it. Betty, what went into that? What were you looking for?
Well, again, we were looking to tell the story. And to tell the story, we began with the migration when African Americans left the South and came north to seek employment and to have a better way of life and to fulfill their dreams. And, of course, to get away from all the atrocities that was going on in their lives. And so we wanted to tell the complete story, the migration to people coming to the Blackberry Patch. And then from the Blackberry Patch to the building of Poindexter Village and the life in Poindexter Village to what now is the new construction. So the story had to be told looking at all of those points of view.
And what sort of what does the exhibit look like?
Oh, the exhibit is incredible. It has a lot of color. It has storyboards. And with the storyboards, that gives all the information of just what I outlined. Plus, it has artifacts. And I believe that the artifacts are so important because for those people who do not take time to read, they can look at the artifacts and identify with them as well as the storyboards.
Jeffrey Lefevre, talk about the significance of the black neighborhood that predated Poindexter. It was called the Blackberry Patch. What was it like?
It was kind of like Flytown. A lot of people know the Flytown area in Columbus. It was an immigrant community, very quickly put up. The housing stock was not the best at the time. Times were changing and people were building better houses
around the
country.
I've heard the phrase shantytown.
Yeah, shantytown. They were houses without running water, a lot of them, without indoor plumbing, sometimes without even heat in them. So very substandard housing. You think it was a lower income people that were moving up and they were provided with the housing they could, much like I said, in Flytown, the same type of thing was going on with the immigration, maybe a little bit earlier, with some of the Irish and the Italians moving into Columbus.
So how did Poindexter come about?
It was a movement through the federal government, actually, to provide better housing. They realized that with substandard housing, health conditions were not good, and they wanted to provide good, solid housing for people and have them lift them, help lift them up, and solid brick structures, heating, running water, brand new fancy stoves. There are actually stories of people who did not get into Poindexter that were a little bit jealous because they didn't live in such quality housing.
It was still segregated, though.
Yes, it was a segregated neighborhood designed specifically for African Americans because the community surrounding it, just even a few blocks away, had restrictions to the deeds in the houses that African Americans could not live in those houses.
Well, you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about the history of Poindexter Village. It was Columbus's first public housing development, one of the first in the country. No one less than the President of the United States, Franklin D. Roosevelt, came to dedicate the opening of Poindexter Village. If you have a question or comment, but more importantly, if you have a memory from Poindexter, we'd love to hear from you and share it today. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page. We'll post a link to the Columbus Historical Society about the exhibit. It's at COSI. It's at their space in COSI. If you want to check that out, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides. In the process, Betty Stoll, of curating Poindexter Village, A Portrait and Stories, what did you get from the Blackberry Patch to tell that story? Was it stories from people who lived there?
No, there were mainly stories from people who lived in Poindexter.
Okay.
Because, remember, the Blackberry Patch preceded Poindexter.
Right.
And so there were many people who were able to tell their stories. And, of course, we did a lot of research and came up with much of the texts that are on the storyboards.
Mm-hmm. Jeff?
And there's some wonderful photographs, actually, of the Blackberry Patch that are in the exhibit. We actually got those from the Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority. They've played a significant role in this as a sponsor for the exhibit, and then also donating several significant artifacts. When they redeveloped the area, there was some documentation and images made of the Blackberry Patch. We also have a bit of a piece of a documentary playing in the space that WSU TV did, mm-hmm. about the King Lincoln neighborhood with Amina Robinson and her stories of the Blackberry Patch. We have a beautiful piece also from Columbus Metropolitan Housing Authority that is an Amina Robinson original portrait or painting, Raganon, as she calls them, President Roosevelt visiting the Blackberry Patch for the dedication. So there's some nice artifacts and some nice information about that area.
Is Poindexter Village, is it located where the Blackberry Patch was, in the same place? And can you tell us, you know, Betty Stoll, where it is?
Okay, the Poindexter Village is located between Mount Vernon Avenue and Long Street on Champion Avenue. It was formerly the Blackberry Patch.
And when they were building Poindexter, what happened to all the people who lived in the Blackberry Patch?
Well, many of those people moved into Poindexter Village.
Right, but in the meantime, where did they go?
Well, they just moved to various areas in the
East
End.
Wherever they could scrounge a place to live, right?
And we're talking about an area, the East area of the city, a self-contained area that people did not have to go outside of the area for anything. So there was housing that was in the area.
Was it unusual for President Roosevelt to come and dedicate a property like this, Jeff Lefevre?
It probably was, yeah, especially in that era, in an African-American area. We've heard talks that there was a lot of politics involved. It was during a time, you know, presidents are always looking for political opportunities and things, too. But it was a good thing that he came, and it was very well regarded by the community, because mm-hmm. to have a president, you know, come and visit your community shows a lot of respect and pride. It really lifts people up when that happens.
Yeah. The development was named for the Reverend James M. Poindexter. Can you tell us about him, Betty Stahl?
Oh, yes. He was a very important man. He was an abolitionist, an advocate, an educator, a leader, and a minister. He ministered Second Baptist Church, which was in the area's second oldest African-American church. He pastored the church for 40 years. As an abolitionist, he was considered a conductor, which was a person who helped the slaves to come through the Underground Railroad. And, of course, we know that many of them came through the Kelton House and some other places. The Eldon Ward was also a person that assisted with the Underground Railroad. So he was a very important figure, the first African-American 1800s to be on city council,
right,
to be with the Board of Education. He was a barber by trade. So he was very, very important for the progression of making changes for African-Americans in this city.
What an amazing person. He sort of did it all, Jeff LaFever.
Yeah.
It was obvious.
Yeah. Back then, one thing I like to say, when you look at the history books, you see people did a lot of things back then.
Yeah.
I don't want to downplay any of his work, but you also got to remember that we didn't have television and Xboxes and things like that for people to do. So they got very active and involved. But he was a very passionate person that really was a great leader in our city. And that's why they chose to honor him with the naming of the village after him. So his legacy would not get lost, because, of course, he predates the village. He died before the village was even completed. And constructed and never lived there.
Betty Stahl, can you tell us what, before we take a break here, what your connection is with Poindexter Village and where your interest lies with it?
Well, I belong to the James Preston Poindexter Foundation. And, of course, this is the group that we're looking at having a museum in Poindexter Village. And I also worked at Beatty Recreation Center, which was on the next street. Mm-hmm. And, of course, all of the families sent their children to Beatty Recreation Center, as well as Poindexter. It's interesting because the Poindexter Recreation Center, it was for the younger children, and at Beatty it was for the older the teens and adults. And so my interests was with Poindexter early during those years, and that dates back to the mid-50s. And Amina Robinson was living in Poindexter Village. Her family I knew very well because they came to the recreation center. And I was teaching art at the time.
Oh, my gosh.
So they were, you know, very interested in art classes.
Are there many places like Poindexter left, Jeff LaFever?
It's a national trend. They've taken a lot of down. You've heard many shows. I've listened to them here on WSU actually talking about this over the last several years. Our inner cities went through a great period of decline. We had a lot of forces that were at play. The highways came in, number one, typically went through the African-American neighborhoods, cut them off, broke apart the areas, disconnected them, as well as other parts of cities from the downtowns. You had the opening up of the mental hospitals and putting people into halfway houses and facilities, and those usually populated minority areas. You had the halfway houses out of the correctional facilities that were opening up, and the flight of people leaving, not just the white flight that happened in the 50s and 60s, but as African Americans, doors opened up for them to live in different communities. When they could, they left also. So it was a national trend. You see many of these things around the country. And we can talk with our next speaker about mm-hmm. that, too, because he has some history down in Memphis with that even. It was a national trend, and it led to the decline. When you have the lowest income level zip code, which surrounded the Poindexter Village in the county, it doesn't bode well for development. It doesn't bode well for real estate agents putting their clients there, people opening businesses. In 1978, Jimmy Carter comes in for the dedication of the Mount Vernon Plaza, which was one of the redevelopment efforts they tried to do in the area, putting in grocery stores and shops and things. And forever, it's had issues, partly, I think, because of the design. They made a strip mall in the area rather than having the street scale shopping that would have been there originally. But it was just an economic issue. You know, it went to a it was a segregated neighborhood by race, but it was economically diverse. And it became segregated by economics, too, like many central city neighborhoods did, not just the African-American ones, but other neighborhoods such as Franklinton became that, too. So.
We will continue our conversation about Poindexter Village. It sort of tells the history of Columbus in its own way. It's important. And there are lots of people out there that want to keep not just their memories alive, but part of Poindexter Village alive as well, too. We'll talk about that. If you have a memory about Poindexter, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org or check out our Facebook page and post your question or comment there. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Columbus's first public housing development was opened in 1940 and became home to generations of African Americans who thrived in the close-knit community there. There have been many success stories as well, from the late famed artist Amina Robinson, who depicted scenes of life there in her work, to longtime local news anchor Angela Pace, now director of community affairs for WBNS 10. More than 33 buildings comprising 426 dwelling units made up the footprint of Poindexter Village. The residents constructed a strong sense of community. Today, two buildings remain from the original development, which is the subject of a new exhibit at the Columbus Historical Society at COSI. It's called Poindexter Village, A Portrait in Stories. Still with us is Executive Director of the Columbus Historical Society, Jeff Lefevre, and also curator of the new exhibit, Betty Stahl. Joining us now by phone from Memphis, Tennessee, is retired Memphis City Council Chairman and former Poindexter resident Myron Lowry. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. When did you live in Poindexter Village?
From about 1955 to 1959. My mother was on public assistance. She was a maid, and I stayed there with my mother and three other brothers. There were five of us in the house.
What was it like back in 55 to 59?
Well, when you grow up in poverty, and that's all you know, I mean, it was a very friendly atmosphere. I lived at 177 North Champion Apartment K. And there was a sense of community. And for those who may not know much about Poindexter Village, I'd suggest going to that little museum that they've now set up there and reading Yolanda Robinson's book, Beyond the Blackberry Patch, because that gives a very good description of life in Poindexter Village. She also documents many people who used to live there and what they're doing now. And it's a wide array of personalities, poets, doctors, lawyers. I was a television reporter at one time before I got into politics. And a good group of dedicated professional people grew up in Poindexter Village.
I read a Q&A you did with the Tennessean, I think, down in Memphis about it. And you brought it up in that interview about the influence growing up there had on you.
Well, I never forget. And I don't think anyone should forget their heritage, where they come from, and what it took for them to get to where they are now. I mean, there was a sense of pride that was instilled in individuals, partly from my grandfather. My great-grandfather was a plasterer. He lived on Atchison Street, right down the way from Champion. And I'm proud of where I've come from, because I've achieved a lot coming from poverty. And I think that everybody can pull themselves up if they're dedicated to hard work and if they do the right thing, stay away from drugs. And that makes a successful individual.
Did you live in the Black Prairie Patch before you moved there, or how did that work?
No. I lived in a foster home for a while growing up. My mother became ill, and my brothers and I were in a foster home. And when she got better, then we moved into Pondexter Village. And from Pondexter Village, we moved off of Kellogg Avenue. The expressway is covering that right now. Mm-hmm. And then over to Fair Avenue, which is right around the block from East High School, where I went to high school.
Right. I know exactly where that is. Back in 1955 to 1959, what was the mood there? Who did you know? What did you do every day? Let's take a summer day like today.
I was a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be very frank with you. Specifically, I can't answer that. All I know is that there was a good feeling. I can relate to the feelings that we had and the things that we did as a community. But in terms of what we did every day, my brothers and I, we played.
Yeah.
We played a lot. So,
what was your unit like? Describe it to us.
Repeat that, please.
What was your apartment, your where you lived? What was it like? How big was it? What was it? What did it make up?
Well, again, I was young,
mm-hmm.
and to me, it was large enough.
Right.
But to look at it today, by today's standards, mm-hmm. it was substandard. There were low ceilings. We had a radiator for heat that used to make noise and give off steam. I remember, you know, going upstairs, the rooms were just extremely small by today's standards.
Yeah.
But at the time, when that's all you know, that's heaven. And I was in heaven at that time. So, I mean, it's nowhere that I would live today, or many people would live today. But I think the city has done a good job in terms of trying to uplift not only Pondexter Village, but other areas around Columbus. As a city council person, I had to deal with the same thing. Memphis has received six Hope Six grants, and we've just about eliminated public housing in this city. We've now gone to scattered housing and mixed-income housing. And going through the crisis for each one of those, I had to deal with community groups that wanted to save the area, just like folks want to save Pondexter Village.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to realize that progress moves on. It's like staying with a typewriter when you've got a computer to work with. You've got to move on with technology. And the best.
Have things happened in Memphis to remember these places, though?
There are, to my knowledge, there are no buildings set aside as museums to reflect that memory. I do recall when we had demolition of some of the units that people gathered the bricks to remember. And that's what they've done in Pondexter Village.
Right.
Miss Robinson has a brick that she's going to give me, but it's too heavy to carry on the plane. So I'm going to give it to my brother, and he's going to use it to either paint his house number on or something like that. But those are some of the memories that we hope to keep.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the history of Pondexter Village in Columbus. You just heard from Myron Lowry. He is retired Memphis City Council Chairman and former Poindexter resident. If you have a question or comment, a memory you want to share about Poindexter Village, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Dan in Columbus, welcome to the show. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, how are you?
Good.
I'm calling. We recently had worked with the NAACP.
Okay.
I'm on the Legal Redress Committee. And we recently just had a meeting on Monday concerning the Pondexter Village situation. And the two, I think originally there was 10 buildings that were supposed to be preserved as historical sites, and then it's now down to two.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about what exactly that situation is as to those two buildings.
I
just may have someone come into my office yesterday. And we talked about that situation and what exactly is going to go on with those two buildings.
Okay.
So can you give me some type of background, maybe I can even take it back to our organization, as to what is the perspective, the plans, and first it was originally 10, now it's down to 2 buildings, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I don't know what happened from 10 to 2 and how it shrunk down so low, when that's such a, one of the first, my understanding, public housings in the nation, and how it could shrink down from 10 to 2 mm-hmm. and only 2 buildings are going to be preserved.
All right. Well, let's thank you for your call, Dan. Jeff LaFevre or Betty Stoll, can you talk about what the plans are for those 2 buildings that are left?
Well, one of the things that Metropolitan Housing said to us, the foundation, is they are not in the business of erecting a museum. Mm-hmm. They're in the business of erecting housing. And so the buildings were, they looked at those 15 buildings that we asked of to remain there to make it into a museum, and even to add more to it than just the repository for mm-hmm. the artifacts and documents. And so Metropolitan Housing has been working with us and talking with us about the buildings. I know that the church wants to have tear one of the buildings down for parking lots. So Metropolitan Housing is really in the middle of it, trying to appease us, you know, mm-hmm. The request that we have to have a museum. And on the other hand, Union Grove, that Baptist church, is one of the oldest African-American churches in the city. And so they're sort of, you know, on the fence mm-hmm. in terms of what they're going to do. We're still talking with them. They understand the importance of having the museum. And so we're just in negotiation as a foundation.
That is the James Preston Poindexter Foundation.
Yes.
Jeff LaFevre, are you kind of in the middle, too, stuck in the middle here? What's going on?
No, actually, we're not really involved in any of that work. But I will say that the Metropolitan Housing Authority also has, there is a need for affordable housing in the city. So they're really stuck in the middle between all of this. And but what we hope is with this exhibit that this is not the ending, this is the beginning. This is the beginning of capturing those stories and preserving them. And if the museum is able to go into one of the buildings using this exhibit as a launching pad for telling that story and getting people excited and showing them all of the history that is there that should be preserved and needs to be preserved for future generations, whatever happens in the site. We don't get ourselves really involved in much preservation work.
Mm-hmm.
That's another organization in town, Columbus Landmarks Foundation.
Right.
We capture the stories and however they turn out and hope to just inspire people with the histories and remembering what things are so we know how we can move forward in an appropriate way.
And Myron Lowry, of course, retired from Memphis City Council. You're seeing all these different sides there as well, and you kind of get that this is a lot of different directions that this one site is being pulled in.
Well, that's correct, and it's inevitable. It happens. But I tell people all the time that progress moves on. I mean, we can't still ride in a horse and buggy when we've got cars and jets today. You know, progress moves on, and you've got to be willing to move with the times. Sometimes it's simply cost prohibitive to keep some of those buildings, especially not for housing. It just, they would yeah. simply be inadequate.
But you don't want to forget either.
Nope, you don't want to forget. You never forget, because it's a part of your heritage, it's a part of the pride, it's a part of the community fabric of Columbus, Ohio, what happened, and you don't want to forget.
Well, thanks to Dan, the caller, for that question. Jeff LaFevre, you know, and Betty Stoll and Myron Lowry, everyone chime in. But let's talk about some of the noted people that are featured in the exhibit. We already mentioned the incredible artist Amina Robinson. Who else came out of Poindexter? Well, we mentioned at the outset Angela Pace, very famous locally. Who else?
Dr. Sherrard was a famous physician who grew up in that area. I don't have Yolanda's book in front of me to go over it, but there's a wide range of individuals.
Lots of important people. Betty Stoll?
Yes, I can't think offhand
yeah.
Some of the people who came out of Poindexter that went on to become very, very important people. excuse me. There were many, many people who made significant contributions. And again, Amina documented so much of that in her paintings.
Right. Why, Myra Lowry, why you said you eventually left, you moved out with your mother and your brothers?
Right, correct. She got a better paying job, and we rented a house with more space. It's like the television series Moving On Up. We didn't go to a high rise, but Kellogg Avenue and Fair Avenue, those were mansions compared to where we used to live.
But he still, how did people describe their memories of Poindexter throughout the exhibit? How did they tell their stories? Were they enthusiastic about it? Were some people reticent about it? What was it like collecting those stories?
Oh, they were enthusiastic. And it was just so many fond memories that in talking with the various people who made those contributions. Now, of course, I was on the opposite end of collecting the memorabilia and certainly putting in a setting where it has the aesthetics to add to the exhibition. So there were others, Julia Lynn Walker, who was also on the committee, and I just remembered that her brother, Dr. Boston, was a person who I believe had lived in Poindexter Village. So I was more or less putting it together, you know, with my eye in making the exhibition come together in a way that had the aesthetics and people could relate to the artifacts. One of the things that I was very adamant about was a kitchen installation. And so I researched a kitchen from the 40s through the 50s, and that was a hit. Many people
really brought back some memories, huh?
Many people came, and it said it reminded them of their grandmother's kitchen. And so we had, many, many people to talk about the importance of the kitchen, because that was where everyone congregated, regardless as to, I think, what ethnic background, that you always congregated in the kitchen, and that's where you ate and told stories, and young kids would listen to all those stories that they would hear from their parents and their grandparents. So the kitchen was very, very important.
Well, I have to say goodbye to Myron Lowry. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
That's Myron Lowry, former retired Memphis City councilman and a former resident of Poindexter Village. That's the topic of our conversation today. There's a new exhibit about Poindexter at the Columbus Historical Society space at COSI. We'll have more information if you go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. We'll continue our conversation. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Poindexter Village originally was developed with 426 residential units in 33 buildings as part of a public housing development intended for African Americans struggling during the Great Depression. The neighborhood flourished and was a center for Black community for decades. Two buildings have been saved for posterity after the development, ravaged by time, crime, and drugs, was demolished. Now it is the subject of a new exhibit at the Columbus Historical Society at its space in COSI, called Poindexter Village, A Portrait in Stories. Still with us is Executive Director of the Columbus Historical Society, Jeff LaFever, and also the exhibit's curator, Betty Stull. Joining us now is Advisory Board Member for the James Preston Poindexter Foundation, Sandra Jamieson. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Sandra, what is the mission of the James Preston Poindexter Foundation?
Well, we're working hard to have those last two buildings to be a museum and cultural arts center. And I was brought into the situation when the PACT started working with the community. And I'm a member of Second Baptist Church that Poindexter was the minister of for 40 years. And so that's my connection with it. And when the freeway came through and sort of broke up the neighborhood and segregation was sort of ending and people were able to move out, a lot of people did not come back in, and so the business didn't thrive. And we want people not to remember the negative things that happened, but we want them to realize what a vibrant part of this community that Poindexter Village was. And my thrust is, of course, to let people know who Poindexter the man was. And recently his name was chosen through a contest to be named for Poindexter Village.
You know, we just heard from former Poindexter resident Myron Lowery, who's a retired Memphis City Council chairman. So he's been on kind of both sides of this issue, kind of in the middle. And he said really nothing's being preserved, all things being equal, in Memphis from their counterpart to Poindexter Village. And that around the country, little is preserved of these places. What do you know? What do you know about what else has been preserved around the country when it comes to these developments that took place?
Well, I'm a person that grew up playing in my grandmother's attic, so I've liked old things for a long time.
Uh-huh.
So to see a lot of beautiful buildings architecturally to be torn down is not something that I'm fond of. Plus, for our young people, if they only come along when they hear the negatives of a certain area, we want them to be proud of their heritage and to know the good family things that were going on, how the community was looking out for each other. You always hear the stories about if you weren't good, you might get the spanking away, and also when you got home. So it's a lot of love that we really want people to understand, and especially the young people, of what a village really meant.
Did you live there?
No, I did not.
Uh-huh.
But because I was a part of the African-American community on the east side, we came into the area quite often. My grandmother lived on Grove Street, which is not too far away. But to come to the stores, to go to the movie houses, those were all a part of my growing up
and then,
being a part of Second Baptist Church.
And then it changed largely because of the expressway, right?
That was one of the main things, yes.
And then, of course, the desegregation laws.
Right. And when they started out with the James Preston Poindexter, he as a man, he was, I guess you could say, his DNA went three ways. He was African-American, American Indian, and Caucasian. And because of his Christian beliefs, he looked out for all faiths and people. And that was his legacy. And that's why his name was chosen.
When you look back, he was the right guy?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He was a very special person. So when they come down and read some of the things, he was a writer for the Ohio State Journal, and he was a trustee at some of the colleges, and he was just a very special, caring person, and he looked out for others, not just the African-American community.
Ann in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I also wanted to point out how diverse it was in the area around Poindexter Village. East Market was on Mount Vernon Avenue, right at the edge of Poindexter. And I went to Ohio Avenue Daycare Center, and a lot of their staff they hired, and the people lived in Poindexter Village. I went to Beatty Park Elementary School, and I think that's where most of the kids from Poindexter went.
Mm-hmm.
And we had Beatty Center. There, Lady Recreation Center, that's we even had our inoculation shot there when I was a young
Now,
person.
Ann, were you a resident of Poindexter Village?
Nope. I lived on the east side, but we went to Ohio Avenue Daycare Center, which is right there at Ohio Avenue, right at the edge of Poindexter Village.
It sounds like Poindexter Village was an anchor to the whole community.
I do believe so.
Did you go over there and hang out with friends?
Well, not really, because at Ohio Avenue Daycare Center, we stayed there at the daycare center.
Okay.
Mr. Henry and a Geneva Ward were in charge of it back in the 50s. So, no, we made our friends at school,
uh-huh.
but then when we went to the daycare center, we, you know, just had our friends there at the daycare center.
Okay. Well, Ann, thank you for that call.
All right. Thank you.
We'd love to hear from others about their memories of Poindexter Village and the area surrounding it. If you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. What did you think about it, Sandra Jameson, when you first saw the exhibit? What did you think of it?
Oh, I was very happy. And I hope the success of it will also give a little bit more oomph to the process of having the last two buildings to be saved. We have no problem with wanting the church to have a parking area, but we have submitted great plans to the CMHA, and we hope that they are able to do this. I know everybody talks about money for different things, but I'm looking forward to those two buildings still being saved.
We have an email from Case, I think, or Casey, who asks, what other documents or artifacts are they looking for? How can people add to this unique story and help preserve Columbus's story? Betty Stoll, any ideas about that?
Oh, we're looking for all documents, manuscripts, artifacts, because the exhibit's going to be there for 1 year. And so we're looking at adding more. We may take some things out and then add more so that we can have that inclusion.
Oh, neat. Okay.
So anything that you have, we are willing to accept.
And do Jeff LeFevre, do they go through the Columbus Historical Society to make that donation or to contact you?
They can come into the exhibit and they can even just talk to one of the docents. We always have a docent in our space when we're open. Our current open hours are Wednesday through Sunday, 11 to 5. So when they come down and see the exhibit, they can mention to the docent, we can take your name and talk about the artifact, the thing, and then take it back to the committee, because we're working together with the James Preston Poindexter Foundation and the Ohio History Center to figure out where the materials are going to go, who's going to house them, how they're going to be preserved and stuff, because the buildings are not ready yet for anything. They're not preserved. You know, we want to make sure we capture those items before they disappear. If the museum does open up, we can then, you know, put them in the museum if they're appropriate.
So is the foundation... Sandra Jameson, is the foundation raising money now to preserve the buildings and just keep them up?
We, as a committee, we are having some funds come in, and we are partnering with other people and hoping for that to occur. But I'd like to say for myself that in the exhibit there is a 1942 city phone book that came from my family. So I was happy to be able to dedicate that. I've, as a historian for Second Baptist Church, we've had the Columbus Metropolitan Library come out and scan many items, and so many of those will also be shared with any museum or the Columbus Historical Society.
Let's see. Kevin in Pataskala, you're on the air. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how you doing? Long time listener, all the way from Fred. You did a great transition from Fred to yourself.
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah, I grew up on Garfield in Atchison, and it's not probably about five blocks in the park from Poindexter or the Blackberry Patch, what we called it. But it probably, in my family, we had all the way from high school dropouts to PhDs, and they were all in that area. You know, all in the that area, and so I had cousins over in Bolivar Arms, which is another project over on that side. But I used to have, you know, I would go into the doctor's name, but he lived over in Eastgate. And there was a lot of prominent families in Eastgate off of Nelson, where Nelson Park is.
Yeah.
But that whole community around there, Mount Vernon Avenue, I came up probably in the 60s when it was the last bustling part of it on Long Street with my brother's place where Hank Marr and everybody used to play when I got into my 20s and would go there. But the Blackberry Patch, I had cousins over there. That was before it got, before crack and the crack epidemic and such like that. Mm-hmm. But you probably don't have a lot of callers calling from there, unfortunately, because of the social and economic standing and who your listeners are, really. So a lot of us that are calling you, our consciousness is to listen to, stay from where we get out of a car smarter than when we got in. But that's, you know, it's just good to hear. It would be great to hear from some of the old schoolers that were there, that know Carl Brown's Market, because you know, that's family of mine, and Goins Market was down the street. But I hear there's an OSU, I worked for the James actually for 10 years in a hospice there. And I transferred when they bought the old St. Anne.
Okay.
Over there. But and everybody now, they really demonize that with the transition that's happening. And now I hear CVS going up around there somewhere and how they're going to tear down the Mount Vernon Plaza. And now that in the histrionics with Poindexter, you know, it's just the gentrification that's happening. But can't forget how prominent that place was.
Right.
And, keep up the good work, Ann.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Alex in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Ms. Fisher. How you doing?
Fine, thank you.
Hey, I used to work down on Mount Vernon Avenue, and it was at Mount Vernon and 22nd for an ambulance company down there called Eastside Ambulance. Now, I grew up in Bexley, and then when I turned about maybe 20 years old, I got that job working on Eastside Ambulance down there at Mount Vernon and 22nd, and it was some of the craziest things I ever seen. But I'll tell you what, working down in that neighborhood, coming from where I came from, was one of the blessings of my life.
How so?
I saw the diversity I saw down there, the things that I never realized were going on right next to me. I mean, I grew up in Bexley, which is on the other side of the train track from mm-hmm. there. And then, you know, I started to become a young man, and I got to go to work out in the real world. And then here I wind up on Mount Vernon in 22nd, and it was just an eye-opener and an education and everything else.
Alex, thanks a lot for your call.
You are welcome.
It's fun to hear that. It probably was fun to put the exhibit together, too, Betty Stull, I imagine. And then also Sandra Jameson just doing what you do and collecting stories and artifacts and that kind of a thing. It's got to be very rewarding.
Oh, yes. I'm a historian for the church. And you mentioned Eldon Ward, and his father and grandfather were the ones that were a part of the Underground Railroad. So we have that legacy within our church. And so I've been able to continue. I'm part of the Franklin County Genealogical Society. There's an African American interest group that I'm a part of. And we're very diligent in trying to keep the stories alive and to do the research for them.
Well, thanks for joining us today. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
That's Sandra Jameson from the James Preston Poindexter Foundation. Also, Betty Stull, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Betty Stull is curator of the Columbus Historical Society's Poindexter Village, A Portrait and Stories. And Jeff Lefevre, executive director of the Columbus Historical Society, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Now, if you want to learn more about that exhibit, go to the link on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Thanks to Sydney Schaefer for producing this program today. Thanks to the All Sides staff, producer Michael DeBonis, associate producer Amy Jurovich, assistant producer Shyla Knott, All Sides interns Summer Cartwright, Vaughn Hunt, and Sydney Schaefer, with video production by Rich Karsmitsky and Amber Karsmitsky. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.